Good morning again. I have known Pastor Dr. Reverend, whatever the title is, Dr. Johnson, for more than 5 years, really. And I think he practiced a lot to remember my last name, maybe. Shihab, Hisham Shihab. I came to this country something like 6 years ago, really, and I discovered that my name is difficult. Hisham Shihab may sound like sushi, a Japanese dish. But I was giving a lecture at Fort Wayne once, and the guy, the professor who hosted my me, couldn't remember my last name, so, but he knew I'm from Lebanon. So he started looking, he said, "Please welcome Mr. Hisham." Then he was embarrassed, you know. He couldn't remember the last name. Then Hisham, kebab. You know, so kebab is better than sushi, I believe, for me, right? Since I'm from Lebanon. So yeah, I know some of your German names put my name to shame in this sense, I believe, you know. More difficult, I believe. I was born in Lebanon in a Muslim family. The name may sound funny here, but there it's, we're 11,000 people. We came from Arabia. My ancestors came from Mecca, from the tribe of Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam. We came as warlords and conquered and ruled the land there for centuries, maybe, if I can say, and multiplied. 11,000 people when I left. They should be now 15,000, really, you know. I have more than 100 first cousins. So why I'm saying that? Because Lebanon is really a special country in the Middle East. It's the only country where you have 50% of the population Christian. Now, they used to be 50%. Now, they are 13%. But when I was born, they were 15%. 74% of the Christians were Catholic, 25% Greek Orthodox, 1% Protestant only. So, we were caught in a tug of war for political power between the Christians and the Muslims, like Iraq today. You know, fighting now and then, you know, skirmishes. So, I was born in 1960. It was relatively a peaceful period, but the struggle between the politicians and the community, you know, notables, if I can say, trickled down to the street. We, the kids, we used to play in the fields, and I noticed how Christian boys would side together if there's a problem, and Muslim boys would side together. So, my first encounter with a Christian boy was when I was playing marbles in the field like this. I looked up and saw Pierre. Pierre means Peter in French. Pierre had a stick in his hand, and that stick was a nail. Pierre banged me on the head. He got me here. You can see the scar, a small scar, really, here. The nail went through, blood spattered my face. So that was my first encounter with a Christian boy. So you can imagine how difficult for somebody like me, who comes from a Muslim family, from the tribe of Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam, to think about making friends with a Christian, or even think about Jesus or reading the Bible. You know, it was out of the question. But the gospel, as we read, is the power of God. And if you go back to the Greek, it says dynamos. We get the word dynamite from it. Dynamos. It's the power of God. It can grab somebody from the darkness and bring him to the light, you know. The word of God is mighty. It's sharper than a double-edged sword. I went to a Muslim school like my most of my peers. My brother, my only sibling, was 2 years older than me. We went to a Muslim school there. I was the best, maybe, at reciting the Quran and classical Arabic. Believe me, classical Arabic of the Quran is very difficult, but I was the best, really. And if you think it's a big deal to come on Sundays to church, you know, Muslims, devout Muslims, pray five times a day in the mosque. And the Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, ordered his followers to teach their kids how to pray ritual prayer at the age of 7. So we were drilled really at the age of 7. If we don't get the habit by the age of 11, we should be beaten up, you know. So we were forced to go to the mosque during the lunch hour. At that mosque, I discovered a young Muslim preacher, a firebrand, a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. He was making sense of the political struggle around us. Palestine, Israel, Christian community, Muslim community. And he said, we lost the glory because we stopped following Muhammad. We are not walking in the footsteps of Muhammad. We follow the West. We follow the Soviet Union. Islam is the answer. We have to go back to Islam, church and state, as we say. He doesn't say, he wouldn't say church, but it's state and religion together. Inseparable, you know. So, and he gave me books written by the founders of the Muslim Brotherhood. We were told that the world is divided into two parts, the world of Islam and the world of infidels. And it's the duty of every Muslim to convert the other parts of the world, persuasion, not by force, or subjugate them by force if they refuse to convert because non-Muslims do not know what's good for them. Non-Muslims are not good stewards of the earth. Non-Muslims are corrupting the earth. And he said, if you don't believe me, look at Hollywood. That was convincing, really. So, at the age of 13, it was my first, really, military training camp. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood, just a note here, is not a military movement. It's a social movement. But Muhammad ordered his followers to teach their kids how to shoot, how to, and it used to be arrows, now firearms, how to shoot, how to swim, how to ride. So it's part of the Muslim education. Every Muslim, male or female, should learn these things if they really want to follow Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam. So we were taken to our first military training camp in summer 1973, and there we were taught how to shoot rifles, how to shoot rocket-propelled grenades, how to shoot mortars. But mind you, the Christian militias were preparing also for a showdown. The Christian community was noticed that Muslims are outbreeding everybody, and one day they'll get more vote than more power, political power. So one day there'll be, so they were really preparing for a showdown. 1975, April 1975, 2 years after my first military training, a Christian militia ambushed a bus carrying Muslims. It was a massacre. They gunned down 27 people and injured 17. A Muslim party militia retaliated, and all-out civil war broke out. At the age of 15, I found myself in the street with a rifle, going to high-rise buildings, sniping at Christian neighborhoods, booby-trapping shops that belonged to Christians. I used to go on my bicycle with my brother to booby-trap a shop. So we did what we had to do, we thought, to defend the Muslim community. Well, one day, I was in a mortar cannon, and it was my first time, small mortar cannon, and we were shelling the largest Christian neighborhood in Beirut with mortars. After the third shell, I felt this is not really right. I signed up to defend the Muslim community, and now I see myself shelling civilian neighborhood. We may injure innocent people. So I went to the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, and he was accessible because he used to come every other day to the front, and I asked him a question. Are we doing the right thing? He asked me a question in return. Who is your example in life? I said, Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam. He said, this is the right answer because Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam, shelled Jewish neighborhoods with catapults. You know what are catapults? Those used in the Lord of the Rings, for example, you know. They put fire and stones and... He said, catapults are blind military machines. They were medieval things. Now, mortars are also blind military machines. So basically, we are doing the same thing, you know. And he said, Hisham, you seem to be a deep thinker. Let me ask you a question. Would you like to be one of our preachers in the future? And I said, this is a big honor. Thank you, brother. He said, we'll assign you a mentor. And in 6 months, they microwaved me into a preacher and evangelist. And I was ready at the age of 16 to give my first message on Friday from the pulpit of Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam. So I was planning to become a Muslim preacher. God has a different plan for my life. If you read Jeremiah 29:11, he tells you, God tells you that God has plans for you that make you prosper. And if you want really to have God laugh or smile, tell him about your plans, really, you know. This is my paraphrasing, not Jeremiah. You know, so I was ready to give my first Friday service. I did a rehearsal for 50 people. They want to make sure that a guy at the age of 16 would take the pressure of the masses, if I can say. There could be 1,000 people in the mosque. No, I did very well. They said, next Friday, your turn from the pulpit of Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam. I said, great. So I had a few days left, so I went to visit my aunt, driving to the mountains, driving with my cousin. It was a Westphalia Volkswagen van, you know, in the 70s, 76, really, you know. They had the engine in the rear. We got into a head-on collision, a crash. Instead of giving that Friday service, really, I broke both legs. I was hospitalized for 50 days, bedridden for a year. I woke up really from anesthesia at the American University Hospital. It was a hospital affiliated to the American University of Beirut in Lebanon. So I started hearing people speak in English, you know, doctors and nurses, and I saw my flesh and bone torn apart, you know. One of my bones, you know, tore apart the jeans, and it was really a mess. So I saw how doctors were, you know, treating my wounds, and I got excited about medicine, especially when I saw how doctors walk the hallways like half gauze and push people around. I thought maybe a medical doctor is better than a preacher. At least you make better money, right? Right? Yeah, so I thought I should put a plan to go to the medical school. I needed to learn more English. So I started teaching myself. I had all the time in the world in my hands because I was bedridden for a year, you know. So I couldn't even walk on crutches. So I started teaching myself English by reading comic books, you know. I discovered Snoopy and Charlie Brown and read all what I can lay my hands on. It was too expensive. I was consuming 5 comic books a day, so I switched to novels and discovered Louis L'Amour, the Western novelist. I read all his novels and short story collections. In 1979, I sat for an English exam at the American University of Beirut and passed with 200 grades above average, and I thought, wow, this is a dream come true. I am a student of biology chemistry at the Harvard in the Middle East with the intention to go to the medical school. I should focus on my studies and get high grades in order to qualify, you know, and after 2 years. So it was day and night. I wanted to focus on my studies, but again, God had different plan for my life. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love Him and are called according to His purpose, as St. Paul said. The first semester, the first freshman semester, my only brother, my only sibling, was killed by a Christian militia. I was devastated. I couldn't focus on my studies. I thought revenge is sweet. I dropped all the courses except one course. I wanted to make friends in college. Some of them were members of that Christian militia. So I thought I can make friends with them, know where they live, how they move at night, in order to ambush them easier, you know. So I got a gun and a silencer and started my plan. But again, God had a different plan for my life. That course that I did not drop was a course of cultural studies, a course of comparative literature. It included Greek mythology, the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Quran, the Book of Islam, Western philosophy, Descartes, Bacon, up to Nietzsche, you know. So the professor was in a hurry. She picked and chose, you know, what she needed. And when we got to the New Testament, she picked the Sermon on the Mount. So I was talking to my enemies with a gun and a silencer when I heard for the first time, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Wow. Blessed are the peacemakers. Wow, this is ridiculous. Or superhuman. Who could turn the other cheek, you know? Then when the Pharisees came and asked Jesus about the greatest commandment, he said, love God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. And I thought, well, I was taught in Islam, they teach, every Muslim thinks that or believes that the Bible is corrupted, that bishops and rabbis put their spin on it, you know, and it's not anymore the word of God pure, you know, it's just corrupted. But, and if you read the Bible, Muslims believe that it will lead you astray. But this Jesus Christ was talking about loving God in the most powerful way I had ever heard. He is even overdoing it, you know. Who could do that? Who could love God with all his heart? Who? So I thought maybe I'm missing the truth with a capital T here. Maybe I should look for the truth on my own, read the Bible on my own. But I thought, well, as a student of philosophy then, it's, you know, we had a lot of philosophy too, maybe the truth is not in the Bible, maybe it's not in the Quran, maybe it's in Eastern philosophy, but I want something practical, you know, not, you know, read about Hinduism or Buddhism. I wanted somebody to, I want to see how it's practiced, because practice is part of belief, you know. So I bumped into a woman who was a yoga guru. She was the disciple of the great Mahatma Gandhi, his disciples really, and she lived many years in India, and she said, you want to know the truth, you want to reach the truth, forget about Islam, forget about Christianity, it's only through spiritual exercises. And I said, okay, let's start. She said, no, you have first to cleanse your body. I said, you mean we have to go and wash, like Muslims do ablutions, you know, before they go to the mosque? She said, no, you have to go vegetarian first, you know. I said, okay, then what? She said, yoga. You have to do hatha yoga, you know, physical yoga. So, in order to do physical yoga, I have to go vegetarian first, then later spiritual exercises. Okay, I said, fine, let's start. So I was a guy 20, 21 years old. I was doing 3 martial arts because I wanted to kill my enemies with my bare hands if needed. I had to munch on fruits and vegetables half of the day to get energy, and spend the other half of the day in the bathroom because of the fibers, you know. So, but I did great at yoga. She said I was the most serious student she had ever seen. I used to put my feet behind my head and rock and stand on my head, and, you know. She said, it seems now you are ready for transcendental meditation. We'll give you a mantra that will dig into your soul, and then you'll rise up to know God step by step, you know. You have to repeat that mantra thousands of times. If you remember David Carradine, that Om, something like that, but it's a different one. It's according to your height and weight and psyche and whatever. So I had to repeat it thousands of times. The more I repeated that Sanskrit word, the more stupid I felt. The more I repeated that word, the more I felt that I am not ascending to God. I'm not climbing up to God. I am even really going down, descending in my dung, if I can say. And it dawned on me. We try to ascend to God with our spiritual exercises. We try to climb up to God with our good works. But we cannot do it on our own. Only in Jesus Christ, God descended to us and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And I felt the doors of heaven open, and God gave me peace beyond human understanding, peace that made me forgive my enemies. It's a long story. If you want really to hear more, we have a presentation, right? 11:15? Or yeah. And with a PowerPoint, if technology works. And I came to this country in 2004, a stranger. But what's with man is impossible, with God is possible. 4 years ago, I was able to, with the power of the Holy Spirit, to start an Arabic fellowship in the suburbs of Chicago and baptize more than 15 people. Today, I have with me a new convert from Iran who was baptized 3 years ago in 2009. It was the last Wednesday of Lent. We have more brothers who can tell you more stories in the presentation, but I thought this will be quick because the story is neat and short and sweet.
خبرنا شو صار معك لما تعمدت.
First, let me explain that Shakir was a cancer patient, and I didn't know him. He called me out of the blue, and he said he needs a ride to Loyola in Maywood, and I said, well, okay. His cousin gave him my number, and I drove him for chemotherapy, and he said, don't park, save the $5, you know, I'll be out in 20 minutes. It was true. It was the first time I believed that a medical practice could be done in 20 minutes, really. So he was out, and I didn't even have time to swing by, have a beer, really. But he lives in Maywood, by the way. Yeah. So anyway, he said, tomorrow the same thing, it's 4 days a week. I said, Shakir, I can't do it, you know. I mean, I can do once, twice a week, but it's 57 miles, you know, back and forth, you know. And I lose my day, you know. So we were able to get two volunteers to drive him twice a week, and I drove him twice. And after he was done, we put thousands of miles on our vehicles. But he went through surgery, removed the lump, removed the shunt, you know, they have a shunt for medication. And in Lent 2009, it was the first week he came out of the hospital, he was moving like a robot, like this. But I mean, Shakir started calling, he wants to come to the Bible study and to church, etc. And he was called to baptism the last Wednesday of Lent, and we baptized him. He went when we baptized, like a robot, you know. So he went home and went to bed, and something happened. After I was baptized, I went to bed, and when I slept, I saw Jesus in a dream. His face was emanating with light. He was wearing white. He asked me, "What's wrong with you?" I told him I had cancer and had surgery. I can't turn right or left. I can't raise my arm. And the doctors told you it will take 6 years to get to normal. Yes. Yeah, yes. Something like that. So Jesus put his hand on my neck and shoulder and told me to wake up, you are healed. I woke up and started moving normally, and I rushed out of my apartment, started knocking at the door of my sister who lives in the same apartment. Look, Jesus Christ has healed me. Look, it was 6 in the morning, and she started crying. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. This is his mission. It's a great commission, not a great recommendation. You know, we have to go and tell and make disciples, you know. And he is doing the work. It's his mission. Missio Dei, the mission of God, God's mission. And I invite you to support this mission. And thank you very much. And I'll sing two verses from Psalm 103 in Arabic. I'll not ask you to repeat after me, okay? Psalm 103 is a psalm of salvation. It praises God for what he did for us on the cross. Not we are doing. If you want to look it up, Psalm 103, the first two verses in Arabic. Bariki ya nafsi rabba wa la tansay kulla hasanati. Bariki ya nafsi rabba wa la tansay kulla hasanati. Bariki ya nafsi rabba, bariki ya nafsi rabba, bariki ya nafsi rabba, bariki. الذي يغفر كل آثمك الذي يشفي جميع أمراضك ومن الحفرة يبدي حياتك وبالرحمة دوما يكللك باركي يا نفس الرب ولا تنسي كل حسناتي باركي يا نفس الرب ولا تنسي كل حسناتي باركي يا نفس الرب باركي يا نفس الرب باركي يا نفس الرب باركي آمين. Thank you, Shakir.